This is Off the Leash with Jeremy and Patty, a podcast that encourages you to tap into your inner warrior and eradicate your self-limiting beliefs. OTL is an ever-growing tribe of individuals who refuse to be complacent and through the power of human connection, push the limits we set upon ourselves in our efforts towards self-development.
All right, friends, it is episode number 4 of Off the Leash, and today we have a special guest for the very first time, the man Sean Masters is here from Tangelo.
What's up, Jeremy?
What's going on?
Man, it's so good to be here.
It's good to have
one
you.
One of the first guests? First guest?
First ever guest.
Man, what an honor.
And I wanted to have Sean on here just because he is just an incredible man. First, incredible business owner and leader. Second, and he lives a life off the leash. So one thing that I just wanted to tell you is that I just super appreciate who you are before I ever knew who you were. As a businessman, just who you are as an individual, when you show up into a room, you make every room you walk into better. And I know you've taken my classes, and I've had your wife in class, and I've seen your kid, and you show up for your wife when she's doing an event. And one thing I just kind of talked about is people who live life of excellence all across their life. So whether they're, you know, their family life, their work life, their, you know, personal life, is just, there's just excellence wherever they go. And just the amount of character you hold is very evident from you and then everybody that you come into contact with. So I just want to tell you, I appreciate that about you.
Man, I really appreciate that too. And vice versa, man, you're someone that I really admire from afar, but also up close. Get to take your classes. I've gotten to know you, over the last couple of years. And like I said, like, I cannot be more grateful to you for inviting me on for this podcast.
Totally.
Episode 4, first guest. Let's go.
Hey, yeah. It's an honor. So let's talk about you, Sean Masters. How did we get here? So where did you grow up, and what was your child life like?
So I grew up in a small town called Edgewood, Washington, which is on the North Hill of Puyallup. So if any Seattleites are listening, the 253 is where I grew up. Hey. And I grew up doing, like, I mean, normal kid stuff. Right? Nothing super special about my upbringing.
But I feel like that's different nowadays, though. Yeah. I feel like it's very different now from what you did, or maybe I did growing up. So
yeah, so I did a lot of martial arts. Of course, I did sports. Had an affinity for business, like, very early on. Had an attraction to it. You know, as first generation, like, college graduate, like, I did that really just to build up my skill set in business. But it was just something that I felt that I could need to do at the time, not really wanting to do it in a passion, but, got into sales really, it's, you know, like, through injury. I mean, we'll talk about, like, the business itself, like, how this all kind of came together, at least in part, was through an injury that I sustained, like, playing sports growing up. But, yeah. And here we are, like I said, like, I guess, like, you can take pieces of my childhood and say, like, that was really unique. Like, of course, like, growing up single parent household, you know, but in my reality, it was very normal childhood growing up, meaning there was a hell of a lot of love in my family, and that's all I needed, and the encouragement to kind of pursue the things that I wanted to pursue. Yeah.
And so the childhood playing sports, what sports did you, like, were you a kind of dialed in on one sport kind of person, or are you, like, playing all of them, dabbling a little bit of this, a little bit of that?
Great question. I heard you talk about specialization in a previous podcast, and totally agree with you. Like, definitely need to explore different sports as a child. And then when you find one that you are really skilled and talented in at a later age, then go for it and start to specialize. I played baseball, golf, basketball, soccer for a little bit, but really did at least one sport through all four seasons.
Yeah, I was pretty similar. Or you're playing, like, two sports at one time. And I think just the value learned just moving your body, like, your body awareness is so big. And I mean, as far as Tangelo goes, when you see people coming in with, like, a one sport athlete, do you see kind of like a one-sidedness to their body, or more injuries when they are just doing that one specific movement? So it's like you're just doing baseball and you're just a pitcher. Like, are you seeing kind of a higher level of injury that way, or just not really?
If we did this podcast 10 years ago, I'd say yes. But today in 2020, athletes, especially student athletes, are more well-rounded than they've ever been just because of the resources that are available to them. And so, you know, in terms of like becoming like asymmetrical and off balance due to kind of their world just playing one sport and doing repetitive movements over and over again, we don't really see that. But even if cross training, stress can happen, and stress equals can equal strain, and strain can equal injury. So, yeah, there are definitely pockets of kids that just kind of like, say, baseball, for instance, like pitching, that don't complement that with strength and conditioning and cross training. But the majority seem to have just so much resource available to them, and they take full advantage of it.
Yeah, that's huge. So before we get too far, obviously I'm pretty well aware with Tangelo. Can you tell all the listeners who Tangelo is, what you do, what you specialize in, just so we have kind of a base understanding?
Of course. Tangelo is a sports medicine company combining the best elements of sports chiropractic, manual therapy, and progressive rehabilitation. So we were founded nearly 10 years ago, so November of 2010. And we have multiple locations here in the Seattle area, but also have a location in Portland, Oregon.
Hey, why Portland?
It's always been seen as like the next step in our growth, as kind of the sister city, you know, going all the way back to 2010. It was like, where do we want to take this? You know, obviously we were thinking small, or acting small, but thinking big at all times. So when we were talking about like, well, what market do we want to expand into next? Portland was the only city that we talked about. Yeah.
So as the co-founder of Tangelo, when you kind of dive into culture as you grow, and how do you like try to focus on maintaining the consistency of your culture, even though you're having different locations, you're growing, your staff is growing. And maybe you can talk to that, as well as, you know, how do you go about like your hiring process of trying to find the right people, not just the people who have the right thing on the resume?
Yeah. There's no substitute to in-person communication and over-communication. Like, when in doubt, over-communicate always and forever. There is no but, it's just over-communicate. And when it comes down to communicating with the Portland team, that's, you know, a good 2.5 hours away, while it's way more convenient and would be considered a hack to just like, oh, let's just FaceTime this, let's Skype this meeting, let's hop on a phone call or just send an email, it goes a long way if you just go down there and have that face-to-face interaction, kind of bring what's going on in Seattle down there physically. Right. And just looping someone, CCing in someone into an email. As far as our hiring process, I have to say it's gotten easier as we've gotten bigger, because we're able to identify the right individuals. We look at the resume. Of course, you want someone to be very competent in what they do, but that's kind of a given. Like, I'm not going to waste the audience time and be like, this is what we look for in the resume. But we look for the behaviors, because life in general is 80% behavior, 20% head knowledge. So we want to make sure that they have the values, they have the behaviors to really mesh with our team and elevate our company. So, you know, the first, I think with any small venture and business, like finding your core group is a cumbersome task, because the implications are really big, right?
Yeah.
If you have a team of three and you have one person that's just kind of pulling everything down, that's considerable, right? But also you're able to, but if you have a team, and we have a team of, I'd say around 40 team members, you're able to vet them through and kind of run them through that prism of what you already have and what's so great about your culture and your team. And do they pass that test? And, doesn't make them a bad person, it makes them a fantastic person, but are they going to mesh well with our culture first and foremost? Cause we put that first and foremost.
Yeah. And I think there's, especially if you have people that are, you know, open to growth, maybe they've never been in a good culture before. I always say when it comes to culture, there's thermometers and thermostats. So thermometers, like taking in the temperature from them around them, and a thermostat is creating the temperature. So, you know, if you have created a company of people who have taken on your culture and identity, and they're consistently putting that temperature out, you know, you could have somebody who's a thermometer who comes in and they adapt, you know, they take on that temperature. You know, it's more difficult, you know, when you have somebody coming in as a thermometer, but they have the wrong culture,
yeah.
You know, and the ability to move swiftly. and acknowledge you've made a mistake and be able to go separate ways, which always has its own relational difficulties.
Just to speak on that really quick, I've had the privilege of like helping to mentor a lot of people, and a lot of questions that I get is, you know, what do I do to improve my culture? And it's a tough question to answer because it's very simplistic, meaning it starts at the top. Your company is a reflection on the owner of the company. You know, yes, the product, the service, the widget, whatever, it's its own separate life form and entity, but how that business operates is a true reflection on the CEO, the owner of that company. So it's really hard to change something if the owner is not embodying the values that they're saying that the company is about.
Yes.
It's very difficult, and oftentimes it can't be changed, to my knowledge. You know, that's a tricky question to answer, but it gives a lot of weight and stock to just how important that is. And because it's so important, it can be very hard to change.
Yeah. And I think when you find, you know, the value in those people that you can have, you know, masters of their craft and good people, you know, and the effect that that has on your business, just kind of like the people over profit, like mentality, when you take care of your people, they take care of your people. And I think that's one thing when I started working for Orange Theory that kind of drew me in, because I had just started my own company and I was like, I need to know how to do admin work, like the paperwork, the behind the scenes. And so I applied to do like a front desk job first, which is why I was there. And they're like, well, you don't want to coach? I'm like, no, because right now my intention is to do paperwork, the stuff I don't want to do.
Right. And turn my weakness into a strength, right?
Yes. Yeah. And if I could do it in a gym setting, even better. And so when I went there, it was a group interview, so everybody's sitting around in a circle, and they had a couple of the founders, a couple of coaches, a couple of sales staff. And I remember when we first sat down, they're like, you can put your paper down because we care more about who you are than what's on your paper. And I was like, I'm in the right place. Like this is a good place to be. And I think it's, you know, what you've done that gets you in the room. It's who you are that keeps you there. And just the ability to show up consistently day to day. And when you, like you said, when the people at the top, you know, are being consistent and aligned with who they say the company is and who, what, the, like they're going to tolerate, I think that goes so much farther, because I think that consistency speaks. And so when people like you first come in, it's great to have like these line of, you know, here's what our company stands for. And then all of a sudden they see you cutting corners and they see you like, oh, well, let's just shift this thing this one time. But when they see you holding staff and, you know, holding still to what you say you are and who you say you are, there's this a mutual respect that comes in, that even if that's not necessarily what they're aligned with or what they're used to, they're willing to work with you in that place because you've shown to be consistent and hold yourself to a higher standard. So I know that everybody that I've worked with and that's been around you has said that about, you know, your company top to bottom. So that goes a long ways when they don't have to say nice things about you behind closed doors, but they still do. I mean, that goes, it goes a long way. Yeah. And so obviously as a co-founder, you get into the business side. Are you someone that's kind of wants to still have their feet on the ground and still working in the trenches, or are you kind of more as the director of growth, kind of looking on how you can expand, or how does that work for you on the day to day?
Yeah. Like I said, before we started, I feel like I see myself as a field agent. Like I need to sit down and punch some keys every now and then. I like to actually do that early in the morning. We'll kind of talk about like routines and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I love being around people. I love socializing. I love being at Orange Theory. I love just being out in the community. So I want to make sure that I do that disproportionate to the business side of things. Because what's going to move Tangelo forward is being proactive and being a part of the community. What's all reactive is just responding to emails, and there's nothing that moves the ball down the field with just responding to emails. It's necessary for everything, whether it be, you know, me on what I do for the business, but anyone that's in professional life, like it's a necessity. It doesn't fire me up, fuel me up, and it doesn't move our vision down the road.
Yeah. So you alluded to some routines. And obviously those are always key plays in, you know, influential, high achieving people is the consistency. building whether habits, routines. So is there things that you do on the daily that kind of keep you on track with, you know, your vision or who you're trying to become? Whether it could be dietary, it could be physical, it could be mental. What's your routines?
My life doesn't look good on Instagram, I'll tell you that. I am the most boring person you've ever met, but I just believe in the turtle beats the hare always, you know? The tortoise, I should say, instead of the hare, the turtle. But so yeah, I mean, it's all contingent on how many hours of sleep I get. So if I get 8 hours of sleep, which does, you know, is happening more and more because I'm prioritizing it. My routine is the same. You can set your watch to my routine. So get up at 5, I'm working by 5:30 to 6:30. I'm working. I get all of like my inbox cleared out through at that time. From 6:30 to 8 o'clock, I'm getting my son ready, taking him to school. 8:30 to 9:30, working out. I'm at work at 10:30 and I just work until about 4:30, and then I go pick up my son and it's all family time. In terms of like my diet is extremely consistent. Like I intermittent fast until noon, and then I eat salmon every single day, and then have my smoothie, and then at night I have whatever I have at home.
What made you go to the salmon train?
Because I grill amazing freaking salmon. What kind of grill is it? What kind of grill is it? It's like just a standard like Kenmore, old series grill. No, nothing super fancy.
I'm super curious about the Traeger grill, so I didn't know if that was
your... it's nothing really fancy.
And what's in your smoothie?
Great question. So base it with water. Used to do almond milk, but base it with water. Do about like 4 teaspoons of chia seeds. Do some kale and spinach. Do like a handful of carrots. And then some mixed berries. So really simple. And then divide it out between my wife and I throughout the day. Oh, and like 3 scoops of like whey protein. And that's pretty much it. But it's something that like I eat this. The reason why I eat it is not because of the routine, because I know that it's going to keep me feeling freaking amazing through the rest of the day. And I like that prediction of like knowing how I'm going to feel, because we've all had those heavy meals and it's like, oh my gosh, I want to go to sleep. And trust me, I love to eat and I love to eat big. And I do that at night, because at night that's when like I've checked all those boxes throughout the day. I'm not answering any more emails, eat, and then it's family time, and then we all go to bed. And so just very consistent, and it's not flashy at all. I do not believe in rise and grind at all. Yes, I might get up at 5 a.m., but it means like last night I was asleep by 9:15 at the very latest. And so that's why I can say like I get up at 5, but I don't sacrifice sleep at all, because the most important thing, I mean, your immune system completely plummets if you get consistently less than 5 hours of sleep. I mean, the research is there, like look for it. It's there. So for people that say, you know, like you got to hustle and get up at 4:30, go for it if you're sleeping those 8 hours. Like, go crazy. But most people don't go to bed at 8 p.m. It's just the reality. Like, and so, you know, like, put it all, set your marker at your sleep. Put, you know, have a great diet because it makes you feel good, not because you think you're supposed to do it. Again, I haven't said weight loss one sec. It's not about that. It's about because it feels good, and I have energy. And so, yeah, that's my routine in a nutshell. It hasn't changed in probably 3 years.
Yeah, Patty will appreciate that the smoothie, because he has a smoothie war going on with his spouse and some of his teammates. So he'll appreciate the smoothie talk. I think it's the sleep thing is huge. I know for me personally, I wasn't sleeping enough. So I have a Whoop strap, which we were talking about before. But just as a tool of awareness, you know, it's like you never really know when you like fall asleep, you know, when you like lay down or around the same time. But just like the science of what your body's doing. And like you're saying with athletes now, like we have so many tools that ignorance is a choice, you know? And so just taking a deeper look at the body, at the science, the information. And obviously there's plenty of information that you kind of have to weed through, because people justify just about anything. So
there's no excuse for not knowing at least like high level stuff. Right. But don't confuse that with being an expert. Like you can't really be a subject matter expert and master of the craft by watching a couple of YouTube videos, but you can get a truer understanding of where this literature and this science comes from
Yeah, and I think so. I mean, along with your routines and habits comes kind of your mindsets and your identity. You know, when you wake up, you're determined to be a certain person. So let's talk a little bit about like your self beliefs. Kind of, I'm a big pillars person, so I used to say like seven pillars that help keep you aligned.
What are those pillars?
For me, obviously from season to season, they change. But, you know, and sometimes it's different for me as an athlete versus me as a spouse, which I just got married recently. So that's congrats, kind of evolving. But we'll say, you know, athletics, because that's majority of our listenership right now. I just posted yesterday, there's a P.D. Pablo quote.
And North it says, Carolina, yeah, come on, raise exactly. up. Take your shirt off. Is that the quote?
But the quote is, barricades, we run right through them. We're used to them. And so when you had a hard time in a workout and not a place where you're like pushing yourself to injury, that's not necessarily what I'm talking about, but say like a mental fatigue or like just the going gets tough or it's a heavier weight than you thought, or say you're in a, you know, physical, you know, sport when you're losing, you know, those type of places where you're running into barricades, you're running into roadblocks, you're running into things you didn't expect. And so just coming to this mindset of this courageous place, I call it living a prepared life, you know, where you've had a vision, you know, you've seen the roadblocks that can come up. You've already seen the solution, being a solution-based thinker, of bringing you back in the place. It's like, I plan for this. I prepare for this. I'm find a way through it no matter what. And that's just the kind of the person I am, is like, I'm solution-based, which probably bugs my wife some because they don't always want solutions.
One of my favorite quotes, I forgot where I heard it from, is like, never voice a problem unless you have a solution. Right.
Yeah, that's funny. I was just talking to my class yesterday about the quote, you know, I don't mind if the first time you come to me, you're ranting about a problem, as long as the next time we talk, it's about a solution. Mm-hmm. I like that because it brings that into like a relational phase, because you have just like a lot of cherry picking that goes on and everybody does it. You know, when you're looking for somebody to just be like, oh yeah, that really sucks. Yeah, let's just wallow in our sorrows a little bit, you know, but the ability to say, all right, great, now what? You know, how are we gonna go through this? That's one. Another one is, you know, the closer I get to the finish line, the stronger I get, you know? So when you start getting hit in the fatigue point, having reasons that are greater than your fatigue, and just those constant reminders of who you are, why you're there, why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking into who you're trying to become and how does that person work? How does that person think? You know, what's their focus like? How do they find joy in the process? And then you're just constantly kind of manifesting that in the moment and bringing yourself to that place. And like I told in the last podcast, like my goal is to always be able to be the best at bringing the physical, the mental, and the emotional together. Yeah. But yeah, those are kind of some of my pillars when it comes to fitness. But as far as your mindset goes, what are the kind of constant thoughts that are going through your mind that can keep you on track with where you're trying to go?
Pretty simple. Just to genuinely be the most positive person in the room, you know, but not confusing that with like blindfully optimistic, right? I always like playing out worst case scenarios. You know, the hedge, if you will, like, and then just know that like something bad will eventually happen. So are you prepared for that? But not being cynical, you know, because nobody likes a rain cloud. And so I definitely want to be, I see myself as just whatever room I walk into. And so it's a checkpoint. Like I have bad days. I roll out of bed, like grumpy and pissed sometimes.
You do?
Not often. I can't remember the last time that happened, but it has happened. That's for sure. But I check myself really quickly because like there's nothing positive to be gained from being negative. So why bother? You're expending energy either way. Expend energy being positive and not expending it being negative, right? And so that's kind of my pillar is, and also just being very consistent as well. Like I found success in consistency. So why would I reinvent the wheel? Like I said, like I have a very boring life, but I play long games. Like I see where I'm not going to go crazy for a week to burn out and say, well, that was a successful week. But if you look at the course of years, it didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
So I'd much rather take it slow, be consistent, and play like the real long game. Like, where do I see myself in 50 years? And just like reverse engineer it back. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I think we have a very similar, you know, character when it comes to being, you know, the most joyful, the happiest, most positive person in the room. And a question I get a lot, which I'm sure you have gotten, or people have at least said in their brain, you know, is one, like the fake it till you make it. Like, is this person just faking? Because nobody can be this happy all the time. Actually, kind of funny. I haven't told this story to many people, but I went and coached a class at a studio, and they went to the front desk and they're like, who is this guy? And there's no way somebody's like that happy all of the time. But it's, you know, there's like, it's not a fake it till you make it. It's, I would say it's a remembrance of who you are and the perspective that you bring in the moment. And yeah, sometimes
it's perspective.
Yes.
Like, don't lose that.
Yes.
You can have kind of ups and downs, but don't lose that perspective.
And that's the cool thing, you know, as a fitness instructor, is that they've come to know me as me, you know, and what they know from me is that I'm probably going to give you better energy than anybody you met. And I'm going to be the most consistent with it. Doesn't matter if it's 4:30 a.m. or if it's the last class, 8:30 at night, or you meet me anytime in between, or you have a conversation between classes, you're going to get the same one, same Jeremy, same conversation, same energy. And that's what we talked about, consistency. When you consistently show up like that every single day, you know, it's one thing where people start to trust you in it. And they come to look to you, you have conversations, they're like, I need a little bit of positivity. But even if they don't say to you that that's what they need from you, they come to you, they want to be around you because it's contagious. And I think for me, you know, obviously I don't wake up like, well, most days I do wake up pretty energetic.
Yeah.
Like, well, as soon as my eyes open, like, I'm ready to go. But there are times when I'm like not having the happiest day outside the gym or having relational things, or, and you show up and like when I, you know, put a microphone on and I'm looking out in the lobby and there's people out there who are expecting to get me, you know, it's that like remembrance of who I am and pulling myself into that place, where like, I remember, I'll tell a quick story. The first time I ever coached at Orange Theory, my manager was also the head coach, and she had a lot of stuff going on, and she's like, come out to the front desk. And I was working the front desk and coaching at the time, and she's like, Jeremy, can you hop in and do my noon class? And I was like, oh yeah, no problem. I hadn't looked at the workout or anything, and all of a sudden the new CEO that had just taken over walks in the front lobby, and he comes up, he's like, hey Jeremy, how's it going? Walks in, he's like, hey, so and so, I'm ready to take your class. She's like, oh, actually Jeremy's gonna teach it. And I was like, wait, what? My first class, I'm going to have this new CEO in here. And then we had two brand new people who are coming for the very first time. So I'm like running them through the studio, breaking everything down for them. I'm looking at the lobby. I'm like, the new CEO's here, looking at the template, like trying to record it and memorize it. And that, like, I knew I was in a good place in life because I had like that nervous energy, like heart beating fast, pregame, like, oh, I haven't felt this in a little while. And for me, I want to constantly be putting myself in those situations where I know that I'm growing. I know I'm stepping into a new place. And I remember that day I walked around the room and I just kept saying, I was born for this. I was born for this. I was born for this. And I was getting myself hyped up. And I was like, I'm just going to do this thing like I've done it a million times. And that was my goal. And by the end, the CEO came over and he's like, man, like, how long you been coaching? It feels like you've done this a million times. And I said, I have. And later he found out it was my first class ever. But that's what I wanted to take into it, is that remembrance of who you are, bringing perspective into your life, you know, and surrounding yourself with people who can do the same. Because I have a big heart for people who pour into everybody else, and you're one of those people. But also we need the same. And it takes special people for us to like trust and to, like, you know, pull us out of our stubborn mindset. So who in your life do you give like the most access to, like when they pull you aside, you're like, whatever they say is probably spot on for me?
My business partner, Dr. Mike, like, he's definitely, yeah, my partner in crime, but he's definitely my mentor as well. And then I just, you know, I pull something from everyone that I come across, you know, like I surround myself with positive people naturally. Like, there are some friends that I've had to like break up with because I was just talking about this yesterday, and I'm sure your listeners can relate. If you consider yourself a positive person and you're in a meeting with a really negative person, how hard is it to shake that off afterwards? It's a bad taste in your mouth. You're thinking differently. You're thinking negatively. You're just kind of in a mood, and it's like, man, I gotta like dust this off of me, you know? And sometimes I'm in like those meetings and I can't avoid them. But I know that like I almost try intentionally create like a gap to reset myself before the next meeting, because I don't want to bring that into it. But it just shows how impressionable we are, right? So I consciously just try to surround myself with positive people such as yourself. And I just get fired up. So why would I not want to be hanging out with Jeremy? Because he fires me up, and that's what we all look for. So, you know, and I just like, there's like mentors online that you look towards too, right? And you naturally follow them, because they speak a language that you relate to. They have a worldview that you relate to, or they have something that you aspire to achieve. And so you try to like pull from that. And so, I try to, yeah. So Dr. Mike Bourbonnais, first and foremost, my wife, of course, like that's my dog right there.
Hold it down for real.
Yeah. Sorry, honey, I didn't mean to call you a dog.
I'm sure she understands the lingo, though.
Yeah, she's my real partner in crime. She's my everything, period. So.
I'm a big listener. I'm a podcast fiend. And is there anybody that you're listening to right now or reading any books that are of value?
Oh yeah. So Phil Jones for sure. I just started reading Exactly How to Sell, and
is that the name of the book?
Yeah. Exactly What to Say is the first book. It's an award-winning book. I love it. It's like in a handbook kind of format. So you can knock this out in a week easy, but don't just read it once and put it down. Like, come back to it at least once a month and let things really resonate. But I'm all about Phil Jones right now. Second to that, I love Dave Ramsey. I love that guy. I listened to a podcast.
He's at 100.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That guy, I'll listen. I can't go a day without listening to a YouTube video or a podcast, Dave Ramsey. And it all started with Entree Leadership like 5 years ago. And then of course, like, there's the popular ones. I mean, Dave's definitely up there with some of like the top like influencers in like the business and finance space. But of course, you got Gary Vee and you got Grant Cardone. And so I try to pull like a little bit from all of them, but Dave Ramsey is probably like the guy I come back to religiously 24/7, 365.
I can totally see that in you, because he's one of those people who like makes everything so simple.
Yeah.
And like, people just over and over again, it's like, try to complicate it. He's like, no, you know, it's this simple. And I think there's people that, you know, we have in our life, because life is complicated, life is complex, but they're those people that bring those things into like a focus for us. People that know us better than we know ourselves, and you know what lines up with who we are. For me, that's my friend Benjamin Ford. And beyond anybody that I've ever met, the thing he's best at is, there's a quote that I love. It kind of describes him. It's like, how do you get a stepping person out of their mindset? You keep asking them questions until they look like an idiot to themselves. And just the ability to take this like frantic mindset, I don't know what to do, I don't know what's going on, I got all these things, and they just like start asking questions like, well, no, I guess, well, that, it's pretty easy then, huh? And those people are so valuable in life, especially for me, because I'm definitely like an ideologist, visionary, to take this massive thing and break it down to actionable items. But I've actually never heard of Phil Jones, so I'm excited to dive into that world. So it's a thing of value. And when it comes to, you know, your impact, one thing that I always ask people, because it's curious to me, because I think a lot of people do it without thinking. But I just think there's an exponential growth in your impact when you know what your impact is. And I call it your living legacy. So a lot of people think about the legacy, like when you leave or when you die, you know, what do you want to leave behind? But I think of it more of like, well, all we got is right now, you know? So what, I always say, what three things do you take into a room with you? And that could be, it could be anything. It could be like positivity, it could be, you know, freedom to be yourself, it could be, you know, you can do anything, like nothing's impossible. What, and when you leave, you know, you have those people when they walk out of the room, and as soon as they're like walk out, you're like, dang, I miss them already. Like, whatever just walked out, like I miss that presence in this room. So what do you think three of the things that you take in the room are? And then I'll tell you what I think three of them are.
Positivity, of course. Just like a lot of like love, you know, because I'm definitely people focused. Like I want to help you as much as I possibly can. And then big biceps. Yeah. No. Hey,
like, like you got to own it.
That's basically it. Like I just, my living legacy is very simple. Like I just want to be the best like father and husband that I possibly can. But I also know that like behaviors are generational, right? Like can't be a great father and husband unless I act like a great father and husband all the time, because that's how my son is going to act like a great father and husband. Right.
Yeah.
And then my grandchildren, and that's, you know, like that's, it's going to happen. And then also like knowing that you can't be those things unless you're winning financially. Like I can't be a great father unless I'm able to support and provide, you know, like, yes. You know, it's like, you know, like it tears me up if I'm, you know, hearing like, you know, I don't want to work so much. I want to be a great father. Well, you can be both, and you kind of need one. You kind of need to not say work to just work, but provide so you can be a great father and husband. So you got to win financially if you're going to be those things. They're not exclusive, separate. So, yeah, man, that's a tough one to answer because it's hard to distill it down to like three things. But really, my living legacy is just knowing like, okay, how is my son going to be as a father and as a husband? So, yeah.
You keep
things pretty small.
No,
yeah,
but big. And you're super spot on. And I think that's so true with how you show up. And sometimes when I have clients, sometimes I'll have a whole group of moms, and I just have like I have a big heart for moms because obviously I have sisters who have little ones, and I know how much energy that takes, and how little me time they get. And so when I get a group of them in a room together, one is just kind of paying honor to them for all that they do pour out that doesn't get seen, that doesn't get appreciated. But also reminding them like they're fierce, you know, it's like the lady lions and the pride that do the killing and the hunting, and just reminding them it's like that your ambitions matter. Like when you show up and you show out, it matters. Your spouse notices, your kids notice. And there's this quote that I love. It says, "Who we are and how we engage with the world are much stronger predictors of how our children will grow up to be than our parenting. In terms of teaching our kids to dare greatly in a never enough culture, the question isn't so much, are you parenting the right way, as it is, are you the adult that you want your child to grow up to be?" Which is exactly what you just described.
Yep.
That's one of my favorite authors, Brené Brown.
Yeah.
Book Daring Greatly. But I think it's so huge to constantly be trying and failing and trying again and getting back up and watching, letting your kids see you how you fall. And so, yeah, I think those are super spot on. I think one thing that you bring into a room is wisdom. You have like the difference between like knowledge and wisdom. It's like knowledge a lot of times gets kind of held over you. Like I know something that you don't know.
Yep.
But you just bring this wisdom, like you invite people into just a greater level of than where they're at right now. And like whether you are having a conversation, you're looking somebody in the eye, or if you're instructing, and I've been in a couple of your classes, it's like this, you can just tell you have a curiosity about you that's like you want everybody to learn what you're learning because you're so excited about it. And one thing for Off the Leash, we always say you only get to hold on to what you give away. And you're only scared to give it away if you know you can't get it again. You know, yeah. But when you live a life of curiosity where you're just constantly learning, growing, you know, shifting patterns. And when I say you can always be on the right road, but if you sit down, you still get run over. And I'm sure you know that, you know, as an individual, as a dad, as
Jeremy,
a business person.
Jeremy just bringing the lines today. Look at this guy.
I'm a huge quote person. Yeah. I love the ability to bring like this big thought, you know, into a broken nothing that you can like chew on, you can marinate in. And I think that was something that kind of changed in the way that I approach, you know, clients or friends is, you know, bringing them tools that they can tangibly use. Yeah. You know, when they walk away from conversation, they look at their life a little differently. They have something to go listen to. And that might take me listening to hundreds, thousands of hours of of content or books to send them something and be like, read page 23 in this book, you know, and you have that knowledge like for such a time as this.
That's and real too, because you bring that to like the cool downs of all those classes, and I love that. Like, it's part of your brand.
And that's, yeah, that's the goal. That's part of my legacy that I want to leave everybody with. And so if we're talking about, you know, positive beliefs, let's go on the flip side of limiting beliefs. Because I'm sure, you know, you have your own that you conquer as you grow and as you run into road bumps, but also, you know, clients and relationships that you have inside the Tangelo building that people come in injured and they're, you know, I'm not able to do this, or I have never, this is impossible for me to do, or, you know, they can't see beyond their moment. So you want to talk a little bit about how to walk other people through their limiting beliefs, you know, maybe using vision or whatever else tool you have in your toolbox.
Well, injury is a interesting thing because it's usually, you know, dealing with an injury usually happens in the shadows and usually done in a silo. And so just the first step of asking for help is huge. It's not something where like I have an injury and then I make an appointment with a doctor. Usually a lot of time has gone by before that happens.
Why is that, you think?
Well, I think people feel somewhat like, why is this happening to me when other people are doing the same things and it doesn't happen to them? You know? And I think everyone's unique. Everyone kind of goes through their own process of kind of mapping, you know, why something happens. So everyone's an individual, but it's not that simple where you have an injury and then you make an appointment and, you know, there's a story there. And understanding, like, everyone has a story to hear their story and, you know, and communicating to them that they are more than just someone with a hurt shoulder, you know, or hurt knee or hurt lower back. They're a person and they have a story, and understanding and taking the time to listen. I know that sounds like cliche, but I don't think it's happening a whole lot in our industry.
Right.
Where there's a lot of actual listening going on. So to listen and understand, you know, the story that led up to that moment, what has transpired past that moment, and where they want to go in the long term. What are their big goals? Because, you know, like if you hurt your back, like deadlifting is like the furthest thing from your mind. It's like picking up a piece or like a piece of paper off the floor or a sock off the floor on laundry day becomes this huge monumental task. So sometimes it's hard to see past that. But it's important that you do see past that and you start thinking like, you know, when you start deadlifting again, how much weight would you like to do? How often would you like to do it? You know, and it's like, well, I'm in so much pain right now. I don't care about that stuff. But your goal is to get back to that. Let's reverse engineer this. We have to take care of you today and how you're feeling today. But I always want to keep that end goal in mind. And so that creates a lot of optimism, you know, it would for me. I mean, this all started with an injury for me in torn labrum on my left shoulder, like, you know, and I'm not impervious to injury at all. I'm dealing with my own ailments, but I always try to always kind of see that end goal of I might have to take a step back now so I can take a huge leap forward. And if it, you know, we're using the example of deadlifting, you know, my goal is deadlift. Like, I'm going to use this moment as a check to really make those weaknesses strengths, to, you know, fill those gaps. So when I get back to it, I'm going to be more resilient and more powerful because of it. But it comes down to treating the person as an individual. That's what it's all about, man.
Yeah. I think that's kind of part of why I try to focus on the mental, physical, and emotional, because like that's literally what you just described. You know, there's so much more to that injury, you know, than just the physical and your ability to bring peace to somebody's mind, you know, their spirit when they're walking in, like they don't want to be there necessarily, you know, or there's exact opposite, like they've gone through that injury so long, they're like so desperate just to find like relief and help. And, you know, especially when the wellness industry, you know, we do a lot more mental coaching than we think. You know, obviously I can't tell your bicep to move and it moves. I'm talking to you, you know, and you're talking to your body. And so one thing I think we can improve on, like in kind of the wellness space, is like how we communicate, you know, and increasing our knowledge of our people skills and valuing people, like you said, looking them eye to eye. Like, although you may not feel like you have the time to listen, like, you're going to get along a lot farther in that period of time just by taking the time to listen first, letting that person feel like seen, understood, and known. And then once you've built that trust, you're like, now I have what it takes to help you, or I will help you find the person
right
that can help you. And those relationships go so far beyond like a client, like provider basis. And I want to talk a little bit about like rehumanization, you know? And that was one thing that really helped me when I started doing like paperwork that I don't like doing. I don't like filling out papers and putting them in the computer and making contact logs and emails. But the thing that made it worthwhile is like, I put a face to the paper. I put a face to that, you know, individuals when they come in, it's like, oh, this is procedure. Sorry, there's nothing I can do about it. And it's like meeting him at that level. It's like, oh, you just lost your job. Well, let's see if we can find a way to keep you in the gym. Because the last thing you need to do when you lose your job is to stop doing physical fitness and getting your body active. And just the amount that that person, you know, perks up and they're like, wait, what? Like, you would actually do that? Like, you actually care for me as a person beyond like your rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little about like just rehumanizing people in the business space.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, kind of goes back, not to sound redundant, but it's just putting like, if someone comes to you and they have a question, you have an answer, that's a transaction. That's not a relationship. Like, you know, and you should have that. You should, you know what you know and know what you don't know. Like you said, you hit the nail on the head. Like, we're really good in our lane. I like to think we're the best in our lane. But when it's outside of that, we know when to refer, right? And that's part of helping them, is knowing when to refer or finding the answer that they're seeking if you don't have it. But just hearing them and building as deep of a relationship and just knowing that we're going to get you out of pain, that's our responsibility to you. That's why you made an appointment at Tangelo. But we're going to be in your corner always and forever. Like, you're not on our team. We're on your team. Like, you know, like, yeah, we're on your team. And, you know, you could be come to see us for 4 weeks, but 4 years from now, we're still going to be thinking about how you're doing and wanting you to always know that we're here for you, whatever you need. And so it's very similar between you and me. I don't really have a unique answer to that question beyond what you just said. Nothing novel, but it's really just about seeing them as a human, as a unique individual, and approaching everything with that in mind. Period.
Love it. So most people know you in some kind of work capacity besides maybe your friends and family. What is a never be told story of Sean Masters?
Oh man. Well, this one's going to be timely. I have never, to be real, I told my wife this story for the first time on Saturday.
Dang.
So she is the only one that knows this story. And it's timely because some of you guys might chuckle when you hear this, but I just finished editing and uploading my first YouTube video. And the reason why, like, I'm 33 years old and the reason why I finally, like, took the reins and did it and got over this fear is because I felt unworthy. And like, I felt like, not unworthy, but I felt like AV was this super, super esoteric skill set that only a few people know. And me kind of being on the science side of the industry, like, I was scared to death of it. So here's the story. So when I was sophomore year in high school, so in my freshman year of high school, I was, I guess you should say, like, popular, right? My freshman year. My sophomore year, that was a really bad time for me. Really bad. Like, I missed like half the year of school due to like bullying in school. And one of the class that really like I avoided like the plague was AV class because I could not wait to get out of there. It was it just came from like, yeah, a couple individuals and it was just bad. Like, I would spare you guys the details, but I would kind of like, I live like maybe 7 miles, 6 or 7 miles from the school. I would just walk home because I just couldn't take it. And so that was all linked in to this like really painful memory, right? And so like I felt like I was I didn't have the skill set. I was not worthy. I don't even know if I passed that class, to be honest with you. I was never there. So why would I pass class? So let's just say I did not pass it. And so my New Year's resolution, like you got to have a written plan, right? And my wife and I were driving down to Portland in December, I wrote down like my goals for each quarter, right? And the quarter goal that I had, say in Q2, was really contingent on how well I performed, because it was all kind of in Q1, because it was all kind of build on one another. And then my number one goal was to get over the fear of editing video and to learn iMovie. And so I was like, okay. And just to like this, just to hit like iMovie tutorial in YouTube was tough. So I did that and I got through it. And then like, as of last Friday, edited and uploaded some rehab videos. And on Friday, the moment I hit like publish, like I was just like, I'm through it. I got through it. Now, again, I'm 33. I was what were you, like 15 years old as a sophomore? That's more than majority of my life that I've been in like this immense fear of this one thing.
That's crazy, man.
All attributed to the bullying that I experienced.
Association.
And yeah, the association. So like, again, coming back, like these are stories that everyone has, right? It's just like, it's iMovie, bro. Like it's not that hard, but it's deeper than that. So to be able to make that commitment to myself, like I'm going to get over this. Enough is enough. I'm taking control. I'm going to learn iMovie. I'm going to shoot. I'm going to edit. I'm going to upload my own video and I'm going to get through it. So yeah, man, no, that was, that's something that I told my wife, like Saturday of last week. And your audience is outside of my wife, the only people I know.
Let's go, man. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And, what's next for you as an individual outside of Tangelo?
Oh man, growth in all ways. And always for always, right? Yeah, I mean, I really do believe, I think it's like a quote from Tony Robbins, like the definition of happiness is progress, right? And so I'm like always trying to like move things forward in all facets of my life, facets from my life. So whether it be my relationships, you know, as a father, as a husband, as a friend, as a co-founder. So just always trying to move forward. And I just do that by continuing to pull from people that I really admire, right? Like I listened to your last week's podcast yesterday and I pulled a lot from that. So, it was, you know, those things move me forward and hopefully your listeners get some value from this conversation.
I'm sure they will. So, other than that, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah, man.
Let's wrap this thing up. Pleasure. But where can people find you online or outside of line here?
Yeah. So I'm not too hot on Instagram right now. Like I really put a lot of energy on the business account. So, but you can definitely find me on Instagram, like Masters Lifestyle. Definitely send me a message. You could always email me the old fashioned way, Sean, S-E-A-N at Tangelo Health. And of course, check out our website, tangelohealth.com, Instagram, Tangelo Health. You know, I would love all support. Like, I mean, that means the world to us that we're able to earn the trust of the community.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool because I know seeing a little while ago, you guys are especially in the top, if not winning, Seattle's best company to work for, small company to work for, and that's always huge too because that's testament to not only are you taking care of your clients, but also taking care of your employees, and I think that's freaking huge. But don't forget to promote your YouTube channel, my friend.
Oh, yeah. You got to check out our YouTube channel.
Yeah. Fresh and live Saturday. Yep. Is that something you're consistently going to try to do now?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Make sure you hit the like and smash that subscribe button, of course. Yeah, it was just, you know, now I have like the bandwidth to be able to overcome that and be able to put some energy into it. And
you definitely really have the knowledge.
Thanks, man.
You have a voice that people need to hear. So,
yeah. So yeah, look for hopefully some great growth on YouTube and some really creative things that we're going to be able to do on there.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, off the leash, episode number 4. As always, it's Jeremy on Instagram, mostly JER_AM_I, and always @OffTheLeashLifestyle. Stay off the leash.